Hello and welcome to volume 45, number 18 of Grapevine, your weekly local news magazine. Brought to you by the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association, this edition is published on Friday the 2nd of May 2025. I'm Graham, your presenter, joined this week by newsreaders Desney and Nevia. In the news this week, there's fly tipping in a cemetery, the JPH changes its parking system, and celebrating 70 years of stock cars. Lots of news stories this week, but before that, we've two birthdays. This year it's a bank holiday weekend birthday for Monica Barker, celebrating on Sunday the 4th, whilst next Friday sees the corks pop for Brian Quinney. We wish you both terrific days. Yes, very happy birthday to both. OK, time to start the news marathon. So it's over to Desney and Nevia.
Hello everybody, this is Desney and I've got Nevia with me. The town will mark the 80th anniversary of VE Day with a series of events. Great Yarmouth will host a flag-raising ceremony, memorial service and beacon lighting to commemorate the end of the Second World War in Europe in May 1945. The day begins on May the 8th at 9 a.m. with a flag-raising ceremony at the Town Hall, open to the public. At 11 a.m, a memorial service and wreath-laying will take place at the War Memorial in St George's Park. A two-minute silence will be observed, followed by wreath-laying by the Mayor of Great Yarmouth, Paula Waters Bunn, and members of the Royal British Legion. The service, led by the Reverend Canon Simon Ward, offers an opportunity to honour those who lost their lives in the conflict and to reflect on the resilience of the Second World War generation. Members of the public are welcome to lay a wreath and are asked to arrive at 10:55 a.m. The celebrations continue at 9:30 p.m. with the lighting of a beacon in Anchor Gardens on the seafront. This event is part of a nationwide tribute, with 1,000 beacons being lit simultaneously to symbolise the light of peace that emerged from the darkness of war. The ceremony will also include the singing of the hymn "I Vow to Thee, My Country," to honour the sacrifices made for freedom. Victory in Europe Day, or VE Day, marks the day when Germany surrendered after 6 years of conflict. Millions of people lost their lives, and many more were displaced or lost loved ones. While VE Day marked the end of the war in Europe, fighting continued in East Asia and the Pacific until August 1945, when atomic bombs were dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. VE Day 80 serves as a tribute to those who fought for current freedoms and a reminder of the resilience and unity that have defined the country ever since.
A 53-year-old woman died at her house after taking a cocktail of drugs, a court has heard. Adele Sutherland of Magnolia Green in Goulston, near Great Yarmouth, was found by a relative on February 9th. A post-mortem report read out to Norfolk Coroner's Court heard she had died from acute cardiac failure due to a heart attack, after taking medications and drugs including cocaine and methadone. A full inquest will take place in court on September 16th.
A new preschool and community centre costing up to £300,000 could be built in Acle Village. Acle Parish Council is seeking permission to dismantle the Fletcher Rooms, a mobile unit on land west of Fletcher Way, and replace it with a larger two-room building. The existing structure, which a surveyor has said is at the end of its life, has been on the site since 2001 and is currently used as the village's preschool. A statement submitted with the application states that a larger building is now required to serve the needs of both the preschool and as a community centre. It says the replacement building will enable expansion of the school, leading to more jobs, and will provide a much-needed venue for meetings and activities in the village. The new building would employ 7 full-time and 4 part-time workers. The proposed opening hours for community centre are 5 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. Monday to Friday and 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. on Saturdays and Sundays. So far, the application is facing one objection from a neighbour who said using the building for non-school activities will not be in keeping with the area. Already there are problems with parking, and it is very dangerous, and if the building is intended to be used for evening activities, I object strongly, the neighbour said. Last year, the parish council in the village held a local referendum to ask people in the village whether it should borrow up to £300,000 for the project. According to the Acle Parish Council website, there were 347 valid referendum responses. The first question, whether the parish council should renew the building, known as the Fletcher Room, saw 68% in support. Asked if the parish council should add £17.15 per year to B&D properties to fund the project, 54% were in favour.
Mystery still surrounds an incident at a Norfolk health centre which saw 16 people fall ill and the building evacuated. Emergency services were called to the doctor's surgery in West Road in Caister at about 11:30 a.m. on Tuesday, following reports that some people inside had fallen unwell. The building was closed and evacuated, and 16 people were treated at the scene. The centre was reopened on Wednesday, and all affected staff members have returned to work. A spokesperson for Caister Health Centre, a branch of East Norfolk Medical Practice, said investigations are still ongoing, but it is believed there is no ongoing risk to staff or the public. After the incident, 4 people made their own way to the hospital as a precaution, but have now been discharged. The East of England Ambulance Service sent its Hazardous Area Response Team, HART, to the practice. They also sent 2 ambulances and 2 ambulance officer vehicles.
Great Yarmouth and Galston Lifeboat Station will be relocating to the former pilot station on Riverside Road after the site was offered to the RNLI by the Port Authority. On Sunday, April the 27th, crew said the move marked a breakthrough in long-running efforts to find a suitable base for the Shannon-class lifeboat George and Francis Phelan. But those hopes were quickly muted by RNLI headquarters. The 2.5 million vessel arrived in Norfolk in September 2023, but was taken away due to the lack of a suitable mooring. In a post on social media, the lifeboat crew said, "After a lot of consideration and legal work, we can now say the pilot station is officially ours. There will be a lot of work to do to make it accommodating and operational, so don't expect to see us there any time soon. But the most important thing is that we now have a berth for our Shannon 1344, the RNLI's first ever legacy lifeboat," the crew said. The post was soon removed from social media, however, and the RNLI has not yet confirmed if and when the lifeboat will return to Norfolk. Named after the late couple who funded its £2.5 million construction, the vessel was met with celebration when it was escorted into its new Norfolk home by 5 boats and cheered by hundreds of onlookers. But despite the fanfare, the boat has yet to launch a single life-saving mission. In April last year, it was stored at a marina in Alton Broad in Lowestoft and then taken to Falmouth in Cornwall. Further details about the renovation and timeline for full relocation are expected in the coming months.
A woman has raised money for a charity close to her heart. Cindy Ellis, a member of Newtown Slimming World, decided to raise money for Centre 81, an activity centre for adults with complex needs and disabilities on Morton Pito Road, Great Yarmouth. Her son is a regular service user at the centre, which also provides community transport. Miss Ellis approached her Slimming World group consultant Kelly Sparks to ask for help with raising the funds. For 3 weeks, members of the group participated in donating £2 each for a lucky square to win a grocery shopping voucher and raise funds. The group also donated some tombola prizes for Centre 81 to use later in the year. The group meets every Thursday at 8 a.m, 9:30 a.m, 5:30 p.m. and 7 p.m. To join one of Kelly Sparks' Slimming World groups, call or text 077-8000-1570. Or find the group on Facebook at Great Yarmouth Slimming World with Kelly. If you would like to know how you can support Centre 81, call 01493852573.
They began by wanting to put smiles on people's faces in a coastal village. But a group of villagers who came together to stage free events in Hopton is facing dwindling funds and an uncertain future. The Hopton Residents Events Committee was formed during the first lockdown in 2020. Founding members Ian and Carol Wall started organising events to help break monotony of COVID lockdowns and boost people's well-being with online quizzes and a Dance on Your Doorstep challenge. Since then, the group has expanded, and its members, all volunteers, have organised a Platinum Jubilee party, Christmas carols at Hopton Ruined Church, a scarecrow trail, and fish and chips suppers. Their greatest success has been the party in the park, which takes place every summer. This year's event, however, is likely to be the fifth and last. Mrs. Wall, 53, said, "It will probably be the last year we can afford to do anything because funding has got so hard to get now." To help fund events, the committee has regularly put on quiz nights, which used to sell out in 3 days, attract up to 100 people and raise £600. Lately, however, they have only managed to sell around 30 tickets. "This affects how much money we can raise," Mrs. Wall said. "It's getting harder and harder. This year will be the last party in the park, sadly." The event costs the group, which is not connected to the parish council, around £8,000 to put on and has seen attendances of between 1,000 to 2,000 people. Costs have gone up. The stage for the party in the park used to cost £1,100, but that has soared to £2,000. "We will continue with the smaller events as much as we can, but we just can't sustain the funding for Party in the Park," she said. "We have been supported by some fantastic businesses in the past. Potters, Haven and Visit Great Yarmouth. I'm absolutely gutted," Mrs. Wall said. The committee is hosting a picnic to mark the 80th anniversary of VE Day on Saturday, May the 3rd, from 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. It takes place at the Ruins on Coast Road and will feature Bertie's ice cream bike and J-Lo's coffee, as well as live entertainment from Sarah May. This year's party in the park will take place on July the 12th at the village recreation ground.
A parish council is objecting to a couple bids to build an extension. The applicants who live in Beach Road in Hemsby are seeking planning permission to build an extension to their house following the demolition of an older conservatory. Hemsby Parish Council has objected to their plans, however stating the proposed flat roof does not conform to local design codes. Planners at Great Yarmouth Borough Council are expected to make a decision on the bid by May 22nd.
8 members of staff have been sacked by the region's largest NHS trust for sexual misconduct in less than 18 months, with the organisation reporting a record high. The past year has seen 44 sexual safety incidents reported within the East of England Ambulance Service Trust, the highest ever recorded. Last year, the organisation dismissed 4 people for sexual misconduct, and the same number have already been sacked in the first 4 months of 2025. Incidents have included harassment, crude remarks and unwanted advances, with colleagues left feeling unsafe, disrespected or diminished by the behaviour. The organisation has also taken a hard line on behaviour including comments about appearance, clothing or body in a sexual nature, unwanted flirting or romantic advances, sexual jokes, suggestive banter and innuendo, intrusive questions about sexual orientation, relationship status and sex lives, and sending inappropriate messages through email, text or social media. The record high prompted the Trust's chief executive, Neil Maloney, to issue a stern warning to workers, urging them to speak out if they witness any such behaviour. In a letter sent to all staff, he said, "Silence is not neutrality, it is complicity. We all have a moral obligation to support those who experience such behaviour. We cannot expect victims to be solely responsible for reporting or tackling this type of behaviour." It comes at a time when great scrutiny is being placed on sexual misconduct within the organisation. Last week, 24-year-old Jamie Kodolski, a former call handler at the Trust, was jailed for 12 years after a series of sexual assaults on women. And earlier this month, married paramedic Graham Scott was struck off from the profession after leaving junior colleagues uncomfortable, physically scared and nauseated through a series of inappropriate interactions. Mr. Maloney said, "I want to make it unequivocally clear that EE East has zero tolerance for sexual misconduct in any form." The purpose of my letter and our recently launched sexual safety campaign is to reaffirm our proactive commitment to creating a safe, respectful and inclusive workplace for everyone. Rooting out sexual misconduct requires not only a firm stance, but also collective responsibility. We must confront the problem with transparency and take decisive, effective action to address it. I am fully committed to ensuring that every member of our trust can work in an environment where dignity and respect are non-negotiable. A former EEAST employee who did not wish to be named said, "I can't say I'm surprised. The Care Quality Commission pointed this all out to the Trust in September 2020, but it seems the problem has not gone away. It shows they never seem to learn any lessons." At this time, the CQC said it found a negative culture at the Trust, which covers Norfolk, Suffolk, Cambridgeshire, Bedfordshire, Essex and Hertfordshire, and placed it in special measures. The organisation has since been removed from the recovery support programme.
A children's play area on the coast has been closed to make way for a new hospital. The Beacon Play Park in Goulston will be fenced off by Great Yarmouth Borough Council. The closure follows the land being bought by the James Paget Hospital, which is prepared to build a new facility on the site. Replacement play facilities will be installed at Emerald Park. The council said the park will be revamped to provoke a range of new inclusive and accessible play features, including a skate park, a multi-use games area and new play equipment.
Labour's plans for boats could sink Broad's firms. East Anglia's boat sales businesses fear Labour's net zero electrification of fishing vessels, pleasure craft and river cruisers will be catastrophic, warning it could sink the industry. The Broads is the second largest boating area in the UK, but boat owners could soon be forced to swap out their diesel engines for electric power under government plans to decarbonise the maritime industry to reach net zero across all sectors by 2050. The plans also include tax rises on marine fuel, with all new boats being required to be entirely electric. But bosses of Broad's boat sales yards say the plans could destroy the industry overnight. James Fraser, managing director of Norfolk Yacht Agency, which has sites at Brundle, Horning and Great Yarmouth, fears it could be catastrophic. "We're staring down the barrel of net zero, and Ed Miliband is turning his guns on the boating industry by talking about electrification," he said. "People have been trying to get traction in the market for electric boats on the Broads, here and elsewhere, for years. The problem in the industry is that the technology isn't there to make it a sensible option for buyers. Technology has improved and batteries are getting better, but if you're talking about seagoing performance power cruisers, it's hard to imagine how they're going to produce something off electric power that's going to make its way to Holland at 20 knots and keep going for 5 or 6 hours. You can't just pull over to charge up in the North Sea." Norfolk Yacht Agency has sales sites at Brundle Bay on the Yare, Ferry Marina in Horning on the Bure, and recently purchased St Olive's Marina on the Waveney for £2 million. The controversial plans for boats are similar to those Labour has already given the automotive industry, a deadline for within the sale of new petrol and diesel cars set to be banned from 2030. It means car manufacturers like Norfolk-based Lotus have been forced to spend hundreds of millions on upgrading their production lines to keep up with the transition to electric vehicles, EVs. Another issue facing the region's boating industry is a skills shortage with a dwindling number of boat builders. East Anglia has a rich history in boat building, with more than 100 boatyards on the Broads in the 1960s. But a shortage in traditional skills has seen this number decline over the years. Last year, the International Boat Building Training College, IBTC, on Alton Broad in Lowestoft closed after almost 50 years, with the company being placed into liquidation. The school had been running since 1975. In 2023, traditional wooden boat building was added to the Red List of Endangered Crafts compiled by the Heritage Crafts Association. The industry isn't getting enough young blood in, and there doesn't seem to be that next generation of boat builders, engineers and skilled people coming through, Mr. Fraser said. "We've had a few apprentices here, but they're not easy to find. There's no proper official boat building training in the East anymore. Boat building apprenticeships, which used to exist in Great Yarmouth and Lowestoft, are no longer here. To find courses for our marine engineer apprentices locally is impossible. We've lost so many boat builders in the region. If you go back through the great boat builders we've had here over the years, Broom, Moonraker, Falcon, Bounty, Alpha Craft, there's lots that just don't exist anymore. There's nowhere near the number of boats being produced in the East as there were even a decade ago."
More news coming up shortly, but first news of May's events from Vision Norfolk. And we'll start with Monday the 5th, with the news that, being a bank holiday, the hub is closed. Tuesday the 6th sees the Caister coffee morning from 10 a.m. until 12 noon, with similar times applying to the Great Yarmouth coffee morning on Wednesday the 7th. Yarmouth's coffee mornings in May continue with a special version on Thursday the 8th in celebration of VE Day. And the caffeine hits for Yarmouth are also on the 14th, the 21st and the 28th, all Wednesdays, with Caster's other hit on Tuesday the 20th, all from 10 until 12. Thursday the 8th sees the May Knit, Stitch and Natter event from 1pm to 3pm, with Friday the 9th hosting basket weaving from 10am till 12 noon and creative writing from 1pm to 3pm. The bowling for May is from 12 noon until 3pm on Tuesday the 13th, with the month's yoga happening on Wednesday the 14th and 21st from 12:30 to 1:30. Games mornings are on Thursday the 15th, 22nd and 29th from 10am to 12 noon, and the weaving workshops are on Friday the 16th, 23rd and 30th from 10 until 12. Now the hub will be closed from 12 noon on Monday the 19th and all day on Bank Holiday Monday the 26th. Tuesday the 27th sees tennis from 10 until 12 noon, whilst Thursday the 29th featured the May Seaside Walk from 1pm to 3pm. The final two events from May include a rug workshop from 10am to 12 noon and the May Audio Book Club from 1:30 to 3pm, both on Friday the 30th. And for more info on the Audio Book Club, contact Mark or Helen on 01603 573000 extension 341. Well, that's it for a busy month of events, so it's back to Desney and Nevia for part two of the news, followed very closely by Desney's look at the week's TV.
A major management shake-up of Norfolk's three hospitals will see the creation of at least four positions with bumper six-figure salaries, it can be revealed. The Norfolk and Waveney University Hospitals Group was formed earlier this year as part of an effective merger between the Norfolk and Norwich, James Paget and Queen Elizabeth Hospitals. The move has created a single decision-making body for the three hospitals under a single chief executive, confirmed this month to be Leslie Dwyer, the current CEO of the Norfolk and Norwich. Local NHS bosses have declined to reveal the salary Professor Dwyer will be taking home in her newly created role as Group Chief Executive, but it is expected her post will be one of at least four newly created roles within the shake-up that will collect six-figure salaries. While the three hospitals are set to share Professor Dwyer as Chief Executive, each site will have its own executive managing director who will oversee the individual sites on a day-to-day basis. NHS bosses have confirmed that these posts, as well as Professor Dwyer's, will be very senior manager, VSM, roles. And while these roles do not appear on NHS pay scales, with a new framework for VSMs expected to be published imminently, the current average salary for these roles within the organisation is around £140,000. Professor Dwyer, however, is currently understood to earn around £250,000 per year in her role at the NNN. And across the three sites, there are currently 10 executives earning more than £150,000 for each at the NNN and QEH and two at the James Paget. It is not yet known if any of these posts will be lost as part of the restructure. The bumper salaries have angered union representatives, particularly coming at a time when the hospitals are planning to make hundreds of job cuts in non-clinical roles. Caroline Hennessy, head of health at Unison Eastern, said staff are coming to terms with proposals for major job losses in Norfolk. A mass reorganisation of NHS services in the area, on top of that, won't reassure workers or patients. Any cuts to workforce numbers will have a major impact on the ability of health staff to give the treatment and care the community deserves. Spreading resources more thinly with a management shake-up is not going to improve patient care nor make staff feel valued.
A man is set to cycle the distance from London to Amsterdam and back on a turbo trainer for charity. On May 5th, Christopher Hudson from Hemsby will be cycling 434.74 kilometres in one day on a turbo trainer via Swift. The challenge is in support of young lives versus cancer. The solo virtual rider is part of a larger challenge he is doing with his colleagues at the Access Group. On June 19th and 20th, the group will be riding the real route from London to Amsterdam over 2 days. He said, "I wanted to push myself a little further to help raise awareness and funds for a cause that supports children and young people with cancer and their families. I'm currently sat at £273, so very much a long way to go." Mr. Hudson is hoping to raise awareness of his challenge with the local community. He's asking for donations through his fundraising page. The page can be found at uk25.accesscharityoftheyear.org/fundraisers/London-2-Amsterdam-the-access-group. He also has a Facebook post about the challenge.
An exact replica of the ship that found America and circumnavigated the globe will be visiting Great Yarmouth this summer. The Neo Santa Maria will be docking at Town Quay in July and will be allowing visitors to board the boat. Yarmouth will become one of the first UK ports to welcome the ship after its tour around the world. The full-scale reconstruction of the ship will be available for people to board and look around from July the 9th to the 20th. The boat is a replica of the flagship boat that Christopher Columbus used to sail around the world on his expeditions. It was the largest of the three ships that Columbus used to sail across the Atlantic Ocean when he discovered America. The replica will offer visitors a chance to relive an accurate representation of what life was like on Columbus's most famous expedition. Visitors are advised to book tickets in advance of the event. The ship will open between 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. daily, and there will be an opening ceremony on July the 9th. Tickets cost £10, £5 for children between 5 and 10 years old. Children under 5 go free. A family ticket, 2 adults and up to 3 children, costs £25. For more information and to book tickets, visit ticketsdoc.neosantamaria, that's NAOSANTAMARIA.org/content. Tickets can also be purchased on the quayside while the ship is in Great Yarmouth, which sounds a bit easier.
New speed limit signs have appeared along a notorious stretch of the A47. The signage is part of a scheme by highway bosses to reduce the speed limit on the Eccles Strait from 60 miles per hour to 50 miles per hour. National Highways say the new restriction is needed to prevent crashes and deaths. The reduction also involves the installation of 4 new average speed cameras to enforce the new speed limits. The work is expected to finish on Friday, May 2nd. Until then, the Eccles Strait will be closed between 8 p.m. and 6 a.m. Between 2017 and 2021, there were 54 crashes on the 6.8-mile Eccles Strait, with 138 people hurt. Cutting the limit to 50 miles per hour will add just under a minute and a half of journeys along the road.
A Norfolk school has praised the impact of a week-long challenge aimed at encouraging pupils to cut down on their phone use. The scheme at Lyngrove Academy saw some students slashing their screen time by more than 75%. Staff launched the voluntary initiative after noticing that many pupils were getting a bit distant and glued to their screens the moment the bell rang. Jasmine Goodman, computer science teacher and senior year tutor, said the second the bell went at the end of the day, they were looking at their phones and walking out of school with their heads down. It was affecting how they interacted with each other and with teachers too. Rather than imposing a ban, the school chose to work with students on a compromise. The result was a week-long phone challenge running from April the 21st to the 24th, where pupils were encouraged to voluntarily halve their screen time. Around 65% of pupils and staff took part, starting by taking a screenshot of their screen time data on April the 20th and again when the challenge ended on Friday. Principal Amy Brooks introduced the challenge during an assembly by acknowledging the value of smartphones, even sharing her own screen, complete with holiday snaps, Duolingo reminders and a slightly embarrassing Spotify playlist. The results, teachers say, were instantly noticeable. After school, they were talking to each other, said Miss Goodman. They weren't walking out staring at screens. Pupils also reported feeling the benefits. A Year 7 student, who cut their screen time from 35 hours to 13, said, "It dawned on me that teenagers can be antisocial. Some days I really do wish I was born in a generation without technology." A Year 10 pupil added, "I went for walks. I would probably do it again. It was so freeing."
A man has been remanded in custody following a hammer attack on the town seafront. Police officers were called to the jetty in Marine Parade at 3 a.m. on April 22nd to report that a man had sustained head injuries in a fight close to the old seaside structure. Officers arrested a man in his 30s at the scene. He was initially taken to the hospital for checks and later on the Great Yarmouth Police Investigation Centre for questioning. The victim, a man aged in his 60s, was treated by paramedics at the scene for the injuries he sustained to his head. Ross Lawrence, 38, of no fixed abode, was subsequently charged by police with grievous bodily harm with intent and possession of an offensive weapon, namely a hammer. Lawrence, after he was charged, appeared at Norwich Magistrates Court on April 23rd and was remanded in custody. He is next due to appear at Norwich Crown Court on May 21st for a plea and trial hearing.
Galston's Pavilion Theatre will feature on a special episode of BBC's The One Show as VE Day celebrations get underway. The theatre will be shown on TV screens across the country on the evening of Monday, May the 5th at 6:30 p.m. As part of the special, presenter and comedian Brian Conley will take hosts Alex Jones and Roman Kemp, as well as the millions of BBC One Show viewers, behind the scenes of the preparation for the theatre's VE Day show. The show's preview reads, "Brian Conley also takes on the role of roving reporter as he goes behind the scenes at the historic Galston Pavilion Theatre in Norfolk, which will be the site of a show-stopping performance to celebrate the role theatres played in boosting the nation's morale. The theatre will be preparing for a big show on May the 8th called VE Day 80. Ticket holders can expect a celebration of music, dance and nostalgia as part of the tribute to the resilience, joy and unity that defined the end of World War II in Europe. Tickets are on sale now at pavtheatre.com or by calling the box office on 01493 662 832.
The world's greatest stage musicals in cinema is coming to the coast. The series brings musical theatre productions to local cinemas across the country, and the Palace Cinema in Goulston is one of more than 500 cinemas across the UK taking part. The spring season will see Bonnie and Clyde, the musical, 2022, on the big screen on May 1st and May 4th. The musical follows the story of Bonnie Parker and Clyde Barrow, the notorious American outlaws, robbers, and criminals who travelled the US during the Great Depression. The series is bringing theatre to the big screen in high definition with state-of-the-art sound. The series aims to bring the magic of musical theatre to a wider audience. It gives people the chance to experience the drama and performance of the stage from the comfort of their local cinema. The series has something for everyone, whether a seasoned theatre goer or someone looking to immerse themselves in the world of theatre. More information about this series, including tickets and listings, can be found at bigscreenmusicals.com/tickets.
A local primary school has sent a warning to parents after two of their pupils were approached by a man close to the school and shown an inappropriate photo. North Dean's Primary School emailed parents on Wednesday afternoon following an incident on Tuesday. The email said, "I am writing to inform you of an incident that took place in the community on Tuesday afternoon. Two of our Year 6 pupils were approached by an unknown male on Beattie Road at approximately 4:55 p.m. The male proceeded to show them an inappropriate photo on his phone. The pupils told their parents about the incident, and they have reported it to the police. The school added that they have invited a local police officer into the school to discuss staying safe in the community. Parents were also urged to remind their children of the dangers of talking to strangers. Norfolk Constabulary has been contacted by the Mercury for comment."
A model railway attraction and adjoining land is to be transformed into 13 bungalows after councillors approved the scheme. The site at Parklands Holiday Park in Hemsby attracted trains enthusiasts and children for decades until it shut in 2024. It is located on land once occupied by the engine shed for the now closed Midland and Great Northern Joint Railway, which linked Great Yarmouth with Sutton Bridge in Lincolnshire. Parts of the land that will be used for the bungalows has been used as a recreation field by visitors to the holiday park. Parklands is run by Blue Ribbon Holidays, a family-run firm, and the holiday park will continue to operate next door to the new bungalows. The firm has said the land is no longer economically viable to be used as part of the holiday park, so is seeking to develop it into housing instead. Three of the bungalows will be offered as so-called affordable housing units, which are marketed at 20 pence of the current average price for the area. Great Yarmouth Borough Council's Development Committee met recently to vote on the application with councillors, ultimately approving the scheme.
Gulls causing issues. Action could soon be taken to stop, in inverted commas, stupid people from feeding gulls the size of, in inverted commas, pterodactyls in a Norfolk village. Belton Parish Council, along with the Great Yarmouth Borough Council, is considering putting up signs in the village to stop people feeding the birds. A parish council meeting heard that a member of the public had complained about people feeding the gulls in the Bracken Road area, which is resulting in a lot of mess on vehicles and property. One man in the road, who wished to remain unnamed, said, "We do not want stupid people feeding the seagulls in this village, otherwise they will take over." In Great Yarmouth, seagulls are a huge problem because they are feasting on all the litter, and some of them are like pterodactyls, for those who know they're dinosaurs. So it's hardly a surprise that the birds are here, since Goulston and Yarmouth are just down the road. I think putting signs up won't solve the issue because people don't listen, but hopefully it won't carry on. A woman who lives off Brecon Road added, "They are very noisy birds. I'm no expert, but they seem like clever things. I hadn't noticed them too much when they were just flying around, but it is fairly common to see a group of them all fighting over rubbish, and this is when you hear them. It is quite a racket, a distinctive and deafening sound that they make." Gulls, or colloquially seagulls, are seabirds of the subfamily Larinae. There are three species of gulls in particular that have adapted well to nesting in urban areas and will often build their nests on roofs. Herring gulls, great black-backed gulls and lesser black-backed gulls. Urban areas are often preferred by gulls because there are fewer predators and a constant supply of food. Gulls are opportunists and will take advantage of whatever food they can find in their environment. Their diet is mostly made up of fish, mollusks, invertebrates and or discarded human food.
The James Paget Hospital is making changes to its car parking system to make entry and exit both quicker and easier. The Goulston Hospital will bring in the new automatic number plate recognition, ANPR, method from next week. It means the patients and visitors will no longer need barriers or tokens, with hopes the new system will make entry and exit to the site both quicker and easier. A spokesman for the hospital said, "Our previous system relied on tokens for visitors and pass cards for staff to operate a barrier system. While it had served us well, it was aging and in need of replacement. The new ANPR system is more efficient for those using our car parks and reduces congestion. It also helps us keep the site safe by deterring people from parking in unauthorised areas, which can be both dangerous and impact the operational running of the hospital." The hospital has outlined the following steps for the car park. Step 1. Arrive in the car park and find a space. The ANPR cameras will have recorded your registration number upon arrival. Step 2. Remember or make a note of your vehicle registration as you will need it later. Step 3. Attend your appointment or visit. Step 4. When you are ready to leave, go to one of the two pay stations outside the main entrance. Pay using a valid credit/debit card or online via our parking app and enter your car registration so that the ANPR system recognises that you have paid for your parking. Return to your vehicle and exit the car park. The hospital adds that its car parking charges remain the same and there is no change to concessionary or free parking arrangements or disabled parking provision. The James Paget University Hospital's website says the income received from the car parking is invested in a range of car parking improvements for our patients, visitors and staff. These include security, maintenance and increasing the number of spaces available on the hospital site. It adds, after covering the running and maintenance costs of the car park, all remaining funds are used by the trust for the provision of patient care.
A well-loved grandmother who died after a fire broke out at a 17th century home by the Norfolk coast has been named. An inquest into the death of Maria Theresa Woolner was opened at Norfolk Coroner's Court on Wednesday, April the 30th. The 86-year-old retired carer died after fire ripped through the 600-year-old thatched home she shared with her partner in Walcott near Haysborough earlier this month. Neighbours had attempted to help the couple escape the blaze as flames swept through their house shortly after 4 a.m. on Saturday, April the 19th. Despite being rescued by firefighters from the property on Coast Road during the early hours of the morning, Mrs. Woolner died later that afternoon. Her partner, who is also in his 80s, was airlifted to hospital and remains in a serious condition. The fire is not being treated as suspicious. Born in Valencia in Spain, Mrs. Woolner had initially been taken to the Norfolk and Norwich Hospital with serious injuries. She was later transferred to Broomfield Hospital in Chelmsford, Essex, which has an on-site specialist burns unit, where she later died. Norfolk's senior coroner, Jacqueline Lake, confirmed the provisional cause of death as severe burns and severe inhalation injury. Statements have been requested from the court from attending police officers, fire investigation services, Broomfield Hospital and Mrs. Woolner's GP. The inquest has been adjourned to take place at the court based at County Hall in Norwich on October the 1st. The property, Old Manor House, was cordoned off for several days as police and the fire service carried out their investigations. Thatch could be seen strewn across the front garden, with a large part of the home's roof damaged by the fire. The couple are understood to have recently sold the property, which had been on the market for £400,000. The house is said to have been used to accommodate pilgrims who visited Bacton Abbey, and it is rumoured that an underground tunnel was built linking the two places. It is also believed to have once been the holiday home of Prince Frederick Duleep Singh, the son of a 19th century Maharaja who moved to Suffolk. Just a little bit about the television. Most of it, well, the most important bits of it, will be the VE 80 celebrations. And I've already read to you a piece of news about the one show, telling you about what will be going on, which is at 6:30 on Monday. The main day, of course, is Thursday, the 8th of May, which is actually the 80th anniversary of VE Day. And on that day, in the morning on BBC One, there will be a special service. And in the evening, on BBC One also, there is a special concert. Apart from that, really, the rest is unimportant. But I will tell you a bit about the sports. All the championship matches start at 12:30. So if you want to catch the Norwich one, you will have to listen to the commentary, which will probably, the programme will probably begin about half an hour before kick-off, as it's so early, 12:30. And the Formula One this week is from America. It's the Miami F1 Grand Prix. And the other thing that finishes this weekend is the World Snooker Championships, the finals taking place on Sunday and Monday. At the moment, they're in the semi-final stage.
When the lights go on again, all over the world, and the boys are home again, all over the world, and rain or snow is all that may fall from the skies above. Like wedding rings, and free hearts will sing when the lights go on again all over the world. smile will still remain, the smile that I'll be saving to greet you back again. When, but I know we'll meet again some sunny day. Keep smiling through, just like you always do, till the blue skies drive the dark clouds far away.
Well, let's call that our own tribute for the VE Day anniversary. Dame Vera Lynn, of course, and a medley of When the Lights Go On Again, I'll Pray For You and We'll Meet Again from her appropriately named album, Hits of the Blitz. Right, time for the rest of this week's local news from Desney and Nivea.
A teenager is due to appear in court next month accused of threatening another person with a knife in Norfolk. Zach Pyre was one of three people seen chasing people through Broad Row in Great Yarmouth. A knife was seen in the chase, which happened about 12:40 p.m. on Monday, April 14th. Pyre, 19, and a man in his 20s were arrested on suspicion of affray and taken to Great Yarmouth Police Investigation Centre for questioning. Pyre, of Marketplace Dereham, was subsequently charged with affray and threatening a person with a knife. He was remanded into custody before a magistrate's court appearance earlier this month. The teenager is set to appear at Norwich Crown Court on May 13th. The man in his 20s was released on bail with conditions while the investigation continues.
Residents urge authorities to suspend evictions. A petition is calling on authorities to reverse a decision that would evict a small community living at a remote spot on the Norfolk Broads. Campaigners are urging the Broads Authority, BA, and government bodies to scrap enforcement action against residents at the Burnie Arms and Beecham Arms. It follows a ruling last week backing the BA's plans to remove structures from the area around the Burnie Arms pub on the banks of the River Yare. Several people living in homes on the property now have just 3 months to leave and find somewhere else to live. Campaigners say the group run a cafe for boaters and support local projects like the Duke of Edinburgh Wild Camping and are vital to keeping the isolated site alive. They warn that removing them will kill the very future the Broads Authority claims to protect, arguing the area would wither before it can be reborn. The Burnie Arms was once one of Norfolk's most remote pubs, accessible only by foot or boat. Since it closed in 2015, a community of 8 people has made their homes there in a collection of outbuildings, static caravans and moored boats. Campaigners say, our goal is a vibrant, community-led, environmentally sensitive regeneration of the site, a nature haven, heritage centre and skills hub for future generations. But right now, today, the presence of the residents is essential. The Broads Authority issued an enforcement notice in 2023, with then-chairman Bill Dixon describing conditions as medieval. Officials cited concerns over flood risks and harm to the character and appearance of the area. A spokesman said, the Broads Authority empathises with those in need of affordable and safe housing. However, landowners cannot be excused from planning requirements which apply to everyone. We understand that the local housing authority, Broadland District Council, who have the responsibility for housing the residents, also had serious concerns that the caravan did not meet minimum basic standards. Campaigners are now calling for the eviction to be paused and for talks between the BA, the Burnie Arms Revival Trust, and the wider community.
A rare Pokemon card is being sold for more than £55,000 in Norfolk. Pokemon cards are based on the Japanese franchise of the same name. Each card features an image of a different character and some are rarer than others, with holographic cards being among the most coveted. Fans often pay over the odds to get their hands on the most special ones, and one eBay seller based in Great Yarmouth is hoping to cash in on this with a recent listing. They are advertising a first edition holographic Machamp card for sale for £55,000. According to the PokerCard Values website, the card would usually be worth around £39, but this local collector is hoping for more because they have spotted an error in the holographic design. The seller does not describe what the error is, but assures people it is near mint or better condition. Machamp is a four-armed fighting type Pokemon and is one of the best in the brand's popular mobile game, Pokemon Go.
The East of England's energy sector is heading to the capital this week with a 200-strong delegation descending on Westminster to call for government backing to build the projects the country needs for a cleaner, greener future. The East has emerged as a major player in the UK's transition to renewable energy and is home to more nationally significant infrastructure projects than any other region. Wind farms off the coast of East Anglia will power almost 20 million homes in the UK by 2035, accounting for a third of the nation's offshore wind output. And with projects in the pipeline like Sizewell C, large-scale solar farms and carbon capture and storage, the East is integral to Labour's pursuit of clean power by 2030, and target to reach net zero by 2050. The sector says the UK's energy future depends on our region and has warned the government that without the East, the nation's lights will go out and we won't hit its climate targets. Kevin Keeble, chairman of the East of England Energy Group, EEEGR, which is organising the Westminster meeting, hosted by Lowestoft MP Jess Asato on Wednesday, says 20,000 jobs and hundreds of new businesses can be created, but only with the government's support. Working together, the energy sector can transform this region, grow the economy, reduce the skills gap and create jobs, he said. If we don't shout about the East of England's contribution, capability, potential and ambition, its impact on regenerating the local economy and providing new skills in communities, no one will. The delegation will be asking Energy Secretary Ed Miliband for 5 key things. To unlock investment for offshore wind projects. give the Sizewell C nuclear power station the green light, unblock the electricity grid by allowing the Norwich to Tilbury pylon route to proceed without delay, back Bacton in becoming a hydrogen and carbon capture and storage hub, invest in skills to end the shortage gap and bolster the workforce.
A large amount of rubbish has been fly-tipped into a field. Waste, including cardboard, plastic bags and garden equipment, was left on a field just off Filby Lane in Great Yarmouth on Saturday morning. Great Yarmouth Borough Council has confirmed that the landowner has been made aware of the rubbish. Conservative councillor for Great Yarmouth, Daniel Candon, "This is disgraceful. Not only has it been dumped on someone else's property to sort out, but it also goes against all the hard work others that in keeping their area clean and having pride in their community." Great Yarmouth Borough Council has confirmed that investigations are ongoing and have been encouraged locals to come forward if they have any information on the incident.
Pub in Caister introduces new parking system, just like the one Nevaeh's told you about. A pub at the centre of Caister Village is changing its parking policies. The car park at the King's Arms on West Road in Caister is regularly used not only by customers of the pub, but also people on errands in the village. The pub's owners have now announced that they are introducing a new parking system on Thursday, May the 1st. This will allow people using the pub to park there for free, while others will have to pay. The car park will use automatic number plate recognition, ANPR. In a post on social media, the pub said, "We understand that some people won't be happy with this, but there are times when our staff and customers can't get parked in the car park that belongs to the pub. It's difficult to please everyone," they added. Fees for the car park from Monday to Saturday between 8 a.m. and 4 p.m. will be £1.70 for up to 90 minutes, £2.30 for up to 2 hours, plus £1.10 per hour over the first 2 hours. On Sunday, between 8 a.m. and 4 p.m, it will cost £1.30 per hour with a maximum charge of £5.20.
This summer will see the green flag drop on 70 years of continued stock car racing at Yarmouth Stadium. The venue in Great Yarmouth is the only site in East Anglia that has continued to provide those thrills and spills over that many years. To celebrate the landmark, a special race meeting will be taking place at Yarmouth Stadium on Sunday, June 15th at the earliest start time of 1 p.m. It will feature Formula 1 BRISCA stock cars, V8 stock cars and national mini stocks, with drivers competing all over the United Kingdom and beyond, with drivers and spectators expected from the Netherlands. The race meeting will also double up as a world championship qualifying round. Car parks will open at 10 a.m, including extra car parking spaces that will also be used in the 1960s, 70s and early 80s. The turnstiles open at 11 a.m. for a 1 p.m. start time. The other stadium stock car racing all those years ago was the Furze Stadium of Cromer Road in Norwich, founded in 1930. A crowd of around 5,000 watching the first meeting at the city venue, run by Don Hannon for the Eastern Speedways Motor Club.
A man who says he lost half his life savings when he resold his caravan to a Norfolk holiday park is taking legal action against the company. Keith Temple, 77, bought the caravan at Haven Seashore Park on North Deans in Great Yarmouth for £60,000 in 2022, using money from his retirement fund. But just 1 year later, due to health-related issues, he decided to sell the mobile home back to the park and was initially offered only £24,000. The former hospital worker, who spent 8 years at the James Paget in Galston and now lives in London with his partner Tom Warnock, did not accept the offer. Haven then increased the amount to £34,800, which the couple reluctantly accepted. But for Mr. Temple, it was an awful thing to go through. He had bought the caravan with his retirement money before losing half of it to the holiday park. The couple are now working with London-based law firm European Consumer Claims, ECC, to pursue a claim against the company. The case is ongoing, but Mr. Warnock, 67, said that losing the money has impacted Mr. Temple pretty bad. He has found it very depressing. You feel like you've been ripped off. You feel like you shouldn't have got yourself into that situation. You feel a bit stupid for allowing it to happen, he added. The couple are hoping to get some of their money back, but more importantly, they want their case to prevent other people falling into the same trap. Mr. Temple said it might teach the caravan parks a bit of a lesson. In a previous statement, the spokesman for Haven said, "We offer all of our customers the option of owning their dream holiday home through a wide range of caravans to suit every taste and budget. Before any purchase is completed, we explain to all potential buyers that the resale value of the caravan may be subject to change and could reduce over time," they added. Haven said they offer all existing owners the more convenient option of selling their caravans back to the park, but also encourage them to consider selling to a trader or privately.
A woman has blasted as disgusting and disrespectful an incident that saw garden waste fly-tipping on graves in Caister Village. Rachel Cross was visiting her parents' and daughter's resting place at Caister Village Cemetery on Sunday, April 27th, when she found mounds of mud and cuttings dumped over old graves. "It's disgusting and disrespectful," she said. On social media, Caister Parish Council, which owns the cemetery, said it was disappointed that someone had been fly-tipping garden waste there. "This is unacceptable and we will take further action if this continues," it added. Commenting on the post, one person said, "Fly-tipping anywhere is unacceptable, but in a graveyard it is downright disgraceful." It is believed that similar incidents took place last year, then stopped before resuming last week. The cemetery is located by the Holy Trinity Church on Norwich Road and is exclusive to residents who have lived in Caister for 5 or more years, or for those who have lived in a care home in the area.
A fresh bid to secure millions of pounds to transform a popular Norfolk museum will be submitted this year. Museum bosses missed out with an attempt to secure more than £4 million from the National Lottery Heritage Fund for changes at Great Yarmouth Time and Tide Museum last year. But officers in Norfolk Museum Service are putting together a new application for money for its Changing Tides, Shaping Our Great Yarmouth project. They are hoping that, by acting on the feedback received from lottery bosses when they rejected the last bid, they will be successful next time. The previous proposal included creating new spaces for visitors, with the museum's courtyard to be enclosed with a glazed roof. Museum bosses are keen to use a partnership with the renowned Royal Museums, Greenwich in London, to bring objects from that collection to Great Yarmouth. At a meeting of the Norwich Joint Museums Committee on Friday, Great Yarmouth Borough Councillor Jeff Freeman said a successful bid would be a huge boost for the popular museum. He said, "We are so constrained at Time and Tide, we cannot go anywhere. From experience, having worked with the lottery for 4 years on about 9 projects, it's what you get out of the feedback if you get rejected. We got rejected, but the feedback gave us the things to go for." He said finding a way to better protect visitors in the courtyard from the elements was important, as the sail which covers it does not always keep the rain out. He said the lottery has said we need to concentrate even more on the galleries and what we've got in there. But hopefully they will find a bob or two left over that we can at least come up with something that will improve the outside area. Changing Tides is an ongoing project, and I understand a renewed application will go in during this current year. The museum in Blackfriars Road opened in a former herring curing works in 2004.
A fish and chip shop in the Norfolk Broads is hoping to add alcohol to the menu. Liam Chipperfield and Paige Heathcote, who run Nippy Chippy on the Broads on Bridge Road in Potter Heigham, have sent a licence application to Great Yarmouth Borough Council. They are seeking permission to sell alcohol on and off the premises from 12 p.m. to 10 p.m. every day. The Nippy Chippy on the Broads also runs a mobile van, Nippy Chippy Norfolk, which takes orders in Norwich and can be booked for functions.
Vaping lounge and community hub opens. It's like a pub, except it serves no alcohol. A new venue which punters can hang out, meet new people and play pool and darts has opened in the former H. Samuel shop on King Street in Great Yarmouth. It is a vaping lounge called the Vault of Vapes and is the latest venture by Lewis Humphrey and Tony Bray. The pair previously opened the gaming hub called the Vault, also on King Street, a few doors down, last year. Mr. Humphrey said, "We decided to create a pub environment and turn it into an alcohol-free zone. The venue has retro arcade games, darts and pool, a borrow and return bookstand, as well as snacks and soft drinks. It has been open for a fortnight and has already built up a community of around 30 regular patrons. We're building a real community, a place for people to go," Mr. Humphrey said. "It's a place where people can hang out, where you can find a bit of camaraderie. It's like what pubs used to be, the community environment where you can go and relax and meet new people." The idea for the vaping lounge was inspired by a friend who was working in a vape shop but hated what vape shops are and the stigma behind them, and he was wondering if he could do his own thing. Last year, Mr. Humphrey and Mr. Bray opened The Vault, a gaming store and community hub in the former Greenwood's clothes shop in King Street. The venue is spread over three floors where people can play board games, arcade machines and consoles, including the PS5, Xbox Series X, Nintendo Switch and Wii. The Vault of Vapes is open from 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. every day, but can stay open for longer depending on customer demand. With a membership, the pool and darts are free.
Well, that's it for this week's edition, which is copyright 2025 of the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association. News content is adapted mainly from the Great Yarmouth Mercury. However, the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association accept responsibility for editorial decisions made for this recording. Your newsreaders next week will be Andrew and Alison, so we hope for your company then for much more of your local news. In the meantime, from all of us here at Grapevine, stay safe and well, and bye for now.